mine and yours. And you don't want to press your weapon to back up and withdraw. Cause trust me when I tell you, you don't want that you can claw. And you don't want to see inside of my...
Chapter 40. The sun was shining. Gaipon was burning. It was going to be a wonderful day. Serves those damn collaborators right, Jet thought smugly, touching the bark of the tree he was crouched in for luck. The flood didn't wash away the trash. We'll just have to burn it out. Smellerby and Longshot were scattered in other trees nearby, also waiting for stragglers, and probably not happy about it. Which was just not fair. He hadn't even started this battle. Aggravated it, sure. Inflamed it, definitely. Since a messenger hawk had arrived days ago and the whole mass of fire bastards had seemed to split right down the middle, arguing about domains and healing and loyalty of all things, from what they'd managed to eavesdrop on. Like the Fire Nation would know anything about loyalty. No, he hadn't had to start this one going. And as far as Smellerby and Longshot knew, he hadn't. Nice that the dagger he'd shown Sokka months back had still been in the treetop wreckage. A real fire assassin's dagger. No matter what that naive Water Tribe kid had thought, it would have been a shame to let it rust on Earth Kingdom soil. So if it ended up in a lone soldier's back, just outside a house that belonged to a fire elder making noise about honor, well, that was just sending it home, right? Jet listened to screams from Gaipon and nodded. So Smellerby and Longshot didn't want to fight for freedom anymore? Fine. He'd just point out that they couldn't let soldiers leave Gaipon to spread this fight elsewhere, now could they? And if there happened to be a few civilians in with them, the traitors deserved it. And if it works here, I can do it again down the coast. Much better than trying to talk that stupid airbender into... Green and brown and livid red heading his way looked like the townspeople were ahead of the soldiers, which would make his fighters a little easier to live with. Him! He knew that face leading the mob, even from this high up. He knew that scar! He got past the Fire Nation besieging Ba Sing Se. He's here, and there are Fire Nation cowards in with those people. Only one thing could explain all of that. I was right! You are a Fire Nation! And now he knew. You didn't give a bender time to see you coming. I should have talked to Uncle. A mistake. A bad one. Granted, Zuko was all too aware of the other boneheaded, foolhardy stunts he'd pulled over the years. But those had just risked his neck. Most of the time. We should have talked before anyone went ashore, damn it. But he'd been tired and hurting and utterly out of his depth. What was he supposed to say to Uncle Iroh? Hey, let's just put all the mutual assassination attempts aside and be family? He hadn't. Kuzan hadn't. Set Ursa in place to assassinate Azulon. He was sure of that. Mostly. But that didn't mean Shidan hadn't. The dragon swordsman knew damn well whose blood ran in Azulon's veins, and he carried a host of grudges of his own, born in blood and ashes and the bones of his winged kin. And Zuko loved Iroh as his uncle and Shidan as his son and friend, and he couldn't choose. Uncle would want him to choose. His whole family would want him to choose. Save your sister, be a patsy for your sister, chase the Avatar for the Fire Lord's glory, so you're anywhere but here. Uncle's choice was relatively benign, at least from Iroh's point of view. Choose between the clan and what was right for the whole Fire Nation. Zuko understood that. He even agreed, partly. But Uncle wanted him to choose. And he was hurt and tired and angry. Agni, so angry about Roku. and the lies, the misinformation, the invasions. Lee could stand them a little better. You lie to people outside the tribe if you have to. And Uncle obviously didn't think of Ozai as his tribe. And if Iroh had had to lie to him to lie to Ozai. But he couldn't be Lee. Not on Suzuran. G's people were under enough strain already. He had to be a commanding officer, not a ragged Earth Kingdom healer. And if he couldn't be Lee, talking was hard enough when he was sane. Hangry and hurt, he didn't want to scream at Uncle. Actually, he did. That was the problem. So he hadn't talked to Uncle. Not really. It hurt too much. He just wanted to wait a few days, just to cool down, to let time wear at the aching rawness of, he lied to me. Mistake. Possibly lethal one. Maybe not for him. Zuko had had more soldiers try to kill him than all of Gaipan's garrison put together, and he kind of doubted anyone was up to Marine standards. But the people with him? If we live through this, I'm never sailing with civilians again. Zuko knew logistics. He did. He knew all the fuss and bother and headaches of trying to get a mass of soldiers and sailors from point A to point B without imploding, exploding, or slaughtering each other in the middle of the night. Food, drinking water, little things for morale, like shudder, music night. He knew all that. And Uncle swore the attempted mutiny last year hadn't been his fault. But any way you sliced it, civilians weren't soldiers. Intellectually, Zuko knew that too. He'd been taught about civilians all his life, even if he hadn't ever really dealt with them for more than a few hours at a time outside of court, before Bossing Say. Court, he'd painfully discovered, really didn't count. Civilians were nothing like court. Even the noble civilians, what few they had with them, weren't. Oh, they were a little like court. They knew about armored manners and knife-sharp words. Aside glances to hint instead of say, like on Mitsu footsteps in the dark. Gia and her poetry classes were proof of that. But real armor and knives and Onmitsu? No, that was... And here was what really hurt his brain. Scary. How just talking about knives could be scarier than not having a good set tucked away for emergencies. Zuko had no idea. But there it was. Weapons scared them. Firebending scared them. His men... G's patient, long-suffering, patched-together crew actually frightened the people they were all trying to protect. Then again, Shirong scared them too, which made no sense at all. Shirong was a Dai Li, and dangerous? Last time Zuko had checked, that was a Dai Li's job. He'd be tempted to beat his head against a bulkhead, but it wouldn't solve anything. Damn it. Not that every civilian was the problem. Mai seemed to be making progress, charming the more fragile types, especially when she dragged Mien along as a proper escort. Tingxia Wen's family were Agni's own blessing, keeping calm and helping Mai defuse the inevitable clashes between armed fire, refugee earth, and fire that had hidden itself for quiet survival. Luli and Huojin likewise. He wished he had 100 of them. But he didn't. And he was responsible for all of these people. And they were scared. They didn't know soldiers. They didn't know ships. And even with rocks on board for the Earthbenders, they really wanted to get back on dry land. Even if it was just for a little while. And Uncle had sworn he had contacts in Gaipan. And sending shore parties off the ships for a day would be just fine. Every once in a while, Uncle was wrong. Zuko wasn't sure what his people had walked into. At this point, he didn't care. The town was insane. At least three different factions seemed to be slitting throats at the same time, and the only sane civilians left in the area had either bolted for the woods or locked themselves in to wait out the bloodshed. Which just went to show that Earth's instinct to stand your ground wiped out even common sense, because there were watermarks above some of those roof lines. What kind of insane moron locked themselves in on a floodplain? All of which left everyone who'd come ashore scrambling to get the supplies they'd come for and get back to the ships. If anything was left of their plan, Uncle was with G's people handling that. Which was good, because Zuko wanted to be sure there was plenty of calming tea on board when he set something on fire. He'd ended up with Shirong and a bunch of spirits. He couldn't even be sure he was coming up with the same numbers of people twice, much less nationalities, as the two of them tried to lead some of the less sane civilians in a loop through the edge of the forest that hopefully would take them away from armed troops, back to the river and safety. He hadn't had a chance to ask why these people were following him. He could only guess that some had attached themselves to long-lost relatives they'd never hoped to see again. Earth Kingdom, mostly. Some seemed to have grabbed what they could carry and followed him right after he'd raised an ice wall to slow down pursuit. Fire Nation, and the only waterbenders who've been through here are... Yeah, Sokka's responsible for this somehow, and I'm going to get him for it. And some, well, given the improvised weapons of farming flails and weirder things, they just seemed to be along for the mayhem. And those were a mix of green and red clothes. He had no clue how to sort out. Squawk! Speaking of mayhem, there was one Fire Nation soldier sincerely regretting rushing ahead of the rest, armor or no armor. "Don't eat him," Zuko called to Asahi, grabbing a wrinkled Fire Nation matron who seemed semi-sane, and pointed her towards the river with the formal sweeping gestures of a lord on the battlefield, where yelled orders or temper might steal your voice completely. "Lead your people. Move them. Get them out of my line of fire. Now." "You don't know where he's been." Okay, that earned him a dirty look he didn't think he deserved. You'd think a sane soldier would be a little more concerned about the ostrich horse trying to take his arm off. Fire! Breathe, step, block, and shove aside. He spared a quick glance towards Shirong. He hadn't felt Earth moving to block that fire blast, and the Dai Li didn't have a hat anymore. Shirong tossed a few stray flames off his hand to sputter out in wet grass, looking as surprised as anyone. Zuko grinned. Green Eyes caught that and narrowed. "In case things somehow managed to get worse," the Dai Li declared as oncoming troops slowed in shock, "I just want you to know one thing." He drew in a deep breath. "A train is not a boat." Which was almost enough to start Zuko giggling right there. And he was going to have to talk to Shirong later about humor and firefights. Wind whispered through the leaves, and Zuko ducked. "You? Again?" A fire flash of thought, there and gone, because Jet was good. Not as good as he thought he was, but very, very good with those hook swords. And hadn't been wounded lately from the way he moved. And from the whites showing all around his eyes, the sheer, thoughtless fury the so-called freedom fighters slashed out with, he'd utterly, totally lost it. Spin, parry, he's going low, jump. No fires to draw off of. This was going to cost him. Worth it. Need to put him down. Shirong can't hold them all off. Zuko whirled a firestorm around him with steel, blasting Jet back into oncoming spears, incidentally searing a few arrows out of the wind, and who was shooting at them now? Water foamed and struck like an octopus, wrapping arms and weapons in a winter crackle of ice. Nobody move! A Kyoshi warrior? Here? A warrior whose young waterbender ally hadn't fought the Fire Nation, Zuko realized, wriggling himself free with a breath of steam and finger twitches to shed melting water. That weave of ice wasn't going to hold long. Okay, I give up, the waterbender grumbled, sea green flicking from Zuko's unruly mob to Jet to the soldiers currently straining against ice. Who are the bad guys? Wrapped to his neck in ice, Shirong snickered. Not that Zuko didn't appreciate the irony, but that choked amusement had drawn the warrior's narrowed eyes, and he really didn't want to try to fight his way past a good swordswoman and a trained waterbender.
Let them go.
Red and gold and blue? Midnight blue, mountain stripes on an old-fashioned Lord's haori. The Lord himself looked almost white-haired enough to have taken his domain when they were still in fashion centuries ago. Though he moved with the grace of a swordsman in his prime, Daisho carried proud and ready Shidan! Fear and hope roiled in Zuko's gut like hurricane waves. Not so much fear for himself, though what Shidan might think of Makoto's great-grandson was enough to give him chills. But if Shidan was here, openly, all of Byakko was in danger.
Let them go, Long Sui,
Shidan stated, looking the guard's commander in the eye.
I believe the captain will give his parole so we may talk.
Talk? Right. Long Sui thought sourly, figuring out a tricky part push that would let the guard captain loose without releasing the rest of the spear carriers. And wincing. He wasn't a master. He was good, but he wasn't that good yet. And his chi ached. He wasn't about to let on to Saoluan. There was nothing she could do. But it ached, gnawing at him like a mole rat. And he was scared. I'm running out of time. It would have been easier to just collapse all the water into a tame wave at his feet. A lot easier. But that wasn't what Shidan had asked for. And given the blazing fire of the dragon's presence was keeping the captain from doing something stupid, Chi plucked at part of his ice, subtly weakening bonds holding the startling green-uniformed firebender frozen. Another waterbender? Where? There's nobody in blue or dressed like home. Oh. Earth-green robes, sleeves covered in odd black tracery that reminded a fisherman's son of waves and storms and white fire crawling across the sky. Ragged black hair shading the teenager's face, but didn't cover the massive scar that almost didn't let you see anything else. Yet, if you could look past it, he has Shidan's eyes. Reaching out with chi and heart, Long Sui felt an echo of the dragon's inner flame, coiling about the frightened people to keep them strong. Not the trained inner fire, Hyorin remembered. It was too raw, too much the firestorm instead of a tame, civilized burn. But strong. And wrapped around that strength, braiding it together when it frayed, was the tide pull of family. It's him, Kaze's cousin, a Yauren. I'm going to live. Long Sui swallowed a sudden impulse to cry. He didn't know Shidan's grandson. He didn't know anything about the Fire Nation boy, or how he'd gotten an entire navy ship to follow him, much less that ragged fleet they'd seen ranging up the river. He didn't know, and part of him just didn't care. Fireborn or not, this was another Yauren, someone who understood. Help. And those pale gold eyes were fixed on Shidan, like the last hold over an abyss. Beside Long Sui, Saoluan choked. He's your...
indeed.
She done smile, show just a hint of teeth. But he's...
If you truly wish to fight with him over burning one of your villages down, warrior.
She done chuckled softly.
Later, if you would. Hmm? I'm sure he will oblige you.
Longsway started. The only firebender who'd hit Kyoshi Island in the past century was... Oh, whale droppings. I always knew the moon had a sick sense of humor. Almost as bad as, say, a certain dragon who deserved to be frozen solid.
So, Captain,
Shidan said easily, as if icy vengeance weren't breathing a few feet away.
Shall we talk?
Talk? The guard captain all but spat. With all due respect, Lord, there's nothing to talk about. You're between us and enemies of the Fire Nation. His voice dropped, low and venomous, including a known traitor. The Fire Lord's son tried not to bristle, but Pale Gold was hard and ready to fight. Ready to kill, Longsway corrected himself with a shiver. He'd seen that look on Saluan once or twice. It wasn't something he forgot. And, okay, that was weird. Some of the tension had gone out of Saluan, even as she stood ready to strike. Why? I'm an idiot. He's a traitor and willing to kill his own soldiers? Then Shidan didn't lie to us. He didn't tell us everything. And I'm going to stick icicles all over him for that. But he didn't lie.
You are mistaken, Captain.
Shidan's gaze was level and just as deadly.
I stand between you and my grandson.
The teenager's expression didn't change. It could have been carved from stone. But through the water, Longsway felt a ripple of hope. He claimed me. He knows whose blood I carry. He has to know, but he still... Zuko swallowed. No, no crying. Bad time for it. Subtly tested ice. Shirong glanced at the dragon, and the captain suddenly grim face.
I might be wrong, he murmured, but I have the impression this just got...
Serious, Zuko finished for him.
Ah. Shirong grimaced. Stay or go?
Wait, Zuko advised. I think... So you lied about your family, too, Jet spat. Why should I expect anything else from a fire bastard? Shirong winced. Zuko almost cringed. There'd be no way to get out of this without bloodshed now. He could feel half the people in earshot go from outrage to murderous.
Your pardon, Captain, Shidan said dryly. I need a moment.
Turned on his heel, took two long strides, and plucked Jet out of the ice like a messenger hawk stooping to grab a rabbit dove, and shook him hard. Given Shidan was maybe an inch taller than he was, Zuko had to stare. Gripping the nape of Jet's neck, Shidan slammed the teenager to his knees. Waited, one deliberate second, for Jet to try to reach for his swords. Wrapped his free hand around Jet's throat, clawed nails dimpling skin, and growled,
"Do not move."
Showing the most sanity Zuko had ever seen from him, Jet froze.
My daughter, Shidan said grimly, is a good, honorable, noble woman. To suggest she would so dishonor her lawfully wedded husband, her clan, and her daughter, whatever grievance you may think you have against my blood, you will end it, or I may not choose to be merciful.
You're the ones who need mercy, but there's not gonna be any when the Earth Kingdom fights back. Jet shot back. The dragon snorted, lip curled.
You are a young fool. Playing for time? Don't bother. Your friends in the trees have met My friends in the trees, there will be no rescue.
His friends in the... Zuko glanced up and tried not to stare at painted faces.
Yu Yan.
She done brought Yu Yan. Meaning another of Byakko's plans, encouraging some of those with a knack for chi use to take up archery, had paid off. But that Shidan had taken them from their unit as well? Oh, this was not good. Blood trickled from the tips of claws, bright as the sweat on Jet's face. Just get it over with.
Shidan, the swordswoman protested. Think it through, warrior. Shidan's tone was calm and cold. To whom has this boy, this murderous, ignorant boy, just given insult?
He glanced at the guard captain.
Death would be mercy compared to what awaits him.
So it would. Deliberately ignoring the Yu Yan, the captain eyed Jet, a smirk twitching his mustache. Zuko recognized that dark satisfaction and felt chill. The captain might claim he was only following orders. Occupied civilians did not insult the Fire Lord. But in this time, in this place, with rebellion and chaos on every hand, it'll be a public, long execution. Another scar on his people's souls.
Enough. We don't bargain with people's lives, Zuko said harshly.
Impudent youngling,
Shidan observed, kneading blood-speckled skin.
But correct.
He titched.
So, what shall we do with you?
Challenge. Subtle. Polite. But Zuko could taste it. Whose clan are you, young one? Your father's to turn this fool over to death as he likely deserves? Or mine to follow an elder of Byakko?
Zuko took a deep breath and let his heart break. And made the only choice he could for his people.
I miss you. Oh, Agni Shidan, I miss you. But this has to be my clan, my domain, or it's not going to work and Kyoshi's decree will kill us all.
Whatever we're going to do, we'll do it on the water.